Welcome to the Arlington Street Church Podcast. Boston Sanctuary since 1729, Arlington Street continues today as a gathering place for progressive people of faith in the Boston metropolitan area and beyond. Please visit ascboston.org for more information about this historic Unitarian Universalist congregation. We're located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets in downtown Boston, Massachusetts. Arlington Street Church. Gathered in love and service for justice and peace.
Just after Thanksgiving, Kem and I spent an excruciating evening in a mall, hoping against hope to find a birthday gift for my mother. My mother doesn't like presents. Nonetheless, I feel compelled to try to find something to please her. I think of this as our annual Ann Sexton head in the oven sojourn. Not surprisingly, we didn't find anything. But late that night, there appeared something in a catalog, like a mirage in the desert, a beautiful brocade jacket in deep earth tones I thought she just might fancy. What's not to like? I ordered it, hoping against hope, and paid the extra for rush shipping. It arrived on her birthday, and it really was lovely. I wrapped it up and wrote the card, and Kem drove it out to my mother's home, leaving it for her inside her garage, up off the floor on top of the trash can where she'd see it. My mother never called. I figured she didn't like it after all and was writing a note to explain that. A week passed, then I had some other reason to call her, and at the end of the conversation, I mentioned the gift. What gift? She asked. As it turns out, my mother's trash collectors actually go into her garage to pick up her trash. The garage where the present was. I ordered a second jacket. And this time I had it gift wrapped and shipped directly to her. Now I'm into this present for some serious money, but the investment is actually more emotional than financial because now I've also missed her birthday. So I really want this gift to be fabulous. This past Monday night, driving home from work, my phone rings and it's my mother. At last, the gift has arrived, and she has received it. The gift wrap is lovely. The card is very sweet. And the jacket, well, it doesn't fit, and the color's not right. And, you know, she just doesn't like presents. I have known my mother for many years now. And although I'm loath to admit it, this particular drama has played out between us in one way or another for most of those years. If you think I'm exaggerating, ask me about the birthday where she just said no and refused to open her presents. But obviously, I still haven't learned. I may be an extreme, but I'm not convinced I'm the only one here that struggles with expectations. I love anticipation. I love surprises. And I wouldn't say that doing away with expectations is actually the way to live a disappointment-free life. It sounds safer and easier on the heart and the spirit, but not as much fun. Nevertheless, measuring the cost-effectiveness of our expectations, making, as it were, a spiritual practice of mitigating our expectations sounds like a very good idea right about now. Author Dean Slater says, "No appointment, no disappointment." In other words, if we don't build our world on expectations, it won't collapse when things turn out to be different from what we'd hoped. This is not resignation, says Slater. It's liberation. It's disillusionment in the best sense, cutting free from the illusions that have bound us. And since all our expectations are based on what's gone before, it's opening up to amazing possibilities, to that which we don't know how to expect. Joyce Carol Oates writes, "For nothing is ever what you expect it will be, nor is it quite like anything else." The geography of expectation teeters somewhere between hope and fear. We hope that something will happen. We fear that something else will happen. And what really happens often has nothing to do with those expectations. And then there's the whole question of faith. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. I like that passage from the Christian scriptures, and it's gotten me through some difficult times, but how much more pragmatic, how much more realistic would it be to just do as the Muslims do, ending their statements of intention with the word inshallah, meaning God willing. It's just plain sensible to acknowledge that we can make all the plans we want while, as some say, God laughs. Said in a different way, expectations are really about running odds against mystery. Chances are, mystery will win. Tsa Patru Rinpoche, one of Tibet's illustrious 19th century wandering teachers, taught that every time we leave anyone or anything to which we're attached, we should assume we'll never see them again. I, for one, don't have the fortitude to live with that kind of acute awareness of impermanence. But I can and do embrace the principle that we never know what's next, so we'd best clean up as we go along. We'd best not go to bed angry, and we'd best tell our loved ones that we love them. I learned this many years ago from a teenager in my parish out on Cape Cod. One of the kids in my youth group, a beautiful young woman named Cindy Ryan, died in a car wreck at the end of the summer just before they all went off to college. After the funeral, I sat with the kids and their friends in a circle in the parish hall. They were understandably in ruins. We were all devastated. But the young woman who was inconsolable was the young woman who had fought with Cindy the night before the accident. They'd exchanged words over something stupid. It would have been cleaned up in a phone call the next day. But there was no next day. I was positive Cindy would have forgiven her. She was forgiven. But now she had to forgive herself. I told them that this was Cindy's last gift to them, to remember to live well, to love and forgive and give thanks while we can. After we've had a brush with death, either our own or someone else's, we know in a profound way that everything can change in a moment. And there's a way that expectations really do take up precious time in the present. Releasing expectations opens a door to gratitude for what is. Dean Slater's friend Maureen was critically ill one winter when she was a teenager. Her doctors didn't expect her to live to see the spring. She did recover, though. How nice to have that expectation fulfilled. And then she saw the forsythia bloom as she's never seen it before. From that time forward, the annual yellow blossom has recalled to her the truth that every day she lived beyond that terrible winter was, as she said it, all cream. Her spiritual practice was to remember not to take it for granted. Does no appointment, no disappointment mean that we shouldn't plan to attend a party next weekend? No, let's party. But let's notice that though we're planning for the future, we're planning in the present. Who knows what will happen between now and then? No one. So let's enjoy getting there as an experience in itself. That way, if we never get there, say we get a flat tire along the way, we won't have thrown away the week in between. And Dean Slater reminds us, to the degree that we're open to the richness of the moment, whether it meets our expectations or not, sometimes the flat tire turns out to be the most interesting part of the evening. Think about what might happen in the wake of that flat tire. There's so much room for creativity when the slate is blank. Poet John Keats called the capacity to live free of expectations negative capability. He said, that is, when a person is capable of being in uncertainties, mysteries, doubts, without any irritable reaching after fact and reason. It's like playing jazz, which someone summed up by saying, you think of something and then you don't do it. Jazz in its purest form, said Hoagie Carmichael, is just the mind connecting with itself. That's freedom. The Buddha taught that freeing ourselves from clinging would end our suffering. Moses, or God, or both, depending on your theology, taught, thou shalt not covet. It's the same thing. When we cling, when we covet, we surrender our peace. And even when we get what we want, the energy of wanting is habitual. We just want more. One of my favorite Zen stories is told of Ryokan, the hermit priest who comes home to his hut on Mount Kagami one night to find that a thief has taken his few possessions. In one version, he catches the thief in the act, who, in his haste to escape, leaves behind a zafu. Ryokan grabs the cushion and runs after the thief to give it to him. Then he sits down and writes one of his most famous poems. The thief left it behind, the moon at my window. No matter how many goods he accumulates, the thief will always be poor, caught up in coveting the next thing and the next. But Ryokan is rich beyond measure. Dean Slater writes, not hypnotized by his own grasping, he has the clear vision to see the completely satisfying, inherent beauty of existence itself. My spiritual companions, whatever our relationship with the future may be, let's see if we can put expectations in their place. The spiritual practice is to untangle ourselves from wanting what we don't have, to come into the present, and to want just this, right here, right now. Let's open the gift of this very moment, the present. Let us seek to live well now. I close with these beautiful words from Franz Kafka. You do not need to leave your room. Remain sitting at your table and listen. Do not even listen. Simply wait. Do not even wait. Be quite still and solitary. The world will freely offer itself to you to be unmasked. It has no choice. It will roll in ecstasy at your feet. Amen.